You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined today, as always, by Spike Friedman, and we are going to have a little ode to Cam Chancellor today. It was released yesterday by Pete Carroll that Cam would be out for the season, and whether he wants to play football is up to him. And so we're reeling today. We're in our feelings. We're going to talk about our favorite Cam Chancellor plays and everything to do with Cam. But before that, Spike, Cam Chancellor, a future Hall of Famer in my mind. It's debatable for you.
He's definitely not a Hall of Famer, but that's okay.
Especially, it's going to be really hard if he never plays football again. Yeah. But I'm pretty sad about this. I know you are, too. How has your last 24 hours been since hearing this news?
Yeah. My saying that Cam Chancellor is not a Hall of Famer is not at all to denigrate the impact that Cam Chancellor has had on the Seahawks and his consistently excellent off-field presence in the Seattle and Virginia communities. I mean, the dude is great. He's a great guy. I've never interviewed him personally. I've talked to a bunch of people who have, actually, and all of them are like, man, Cam Chancellor's the absolute best and most interesting guy to talk to in that D backfield in the Legion of Boom, which is crazy to think about because the other guys are Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas. And Earl Thomas is Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman's Richard Sherman, but Cam Chancellor being the most interesting guy amongst those is really interesting to me. And I'll say that nobody has had more impactful moments in a literal way during the Seahawks' recent run than Cam Chancellor. It isn't even close. When you think about what he did to Vernon Davis, when you think about the interceptions that he had over his career, when you think about the other things that he did to Vernon Davis over his career, just all of his hits, and the fact that he evolved with the game, I feel like, and I might be wrong to say this, but there's a degree to which the NFL maybe kind of peaked in 2015. The last 2 years have both been pretty rough for the league in a bunch of different ways as we learn more about concussions, as it becomes increasingly politicized. But as the league was sort of reaching that peak from 2011 when Chancellor entered the league to 2015, or 2010 rather, when he entered the league to 2015, I feel like he evolved with the game. He got good at hitting guys clean. When he came into the league, he'd hit guys too hard, he'd get flagged. By the end of that time, he had the hawk tackle technique mastered. He was just as dominant in the run game in terms of making tackles, but he was doing it without getting penalties. And I think that that's a really cool thing, is that he's the guy who actually did improve. He's the guy who on and off the field is a great guy. He is who and what you want from a superstar on your team. And the only reason he's not a bigger star is because he was surrounded by so many big stars. Cam Chancellor's the best.
Yeah, I can't say enough good things about Cam Chancellor. The way that he's evolved throughout his career, like you were saying, it just speaks to the kind of smart and calculated player that he is, or even was, because we don't know his future. And he's had so many impactful plays and so many just fun plays. It's a joy to watch Cam Chancellor play football. The style of football that he plays is one of a kind. I don't think that, we don't see many players like Cam Chancellor to, have the skills of a safety, but play the run like a linebacker. And I marvel at Cam Chancellor. Cam Chancellor in his prime is, one of the most feared football players in all of NFL history, and he does it in a clean way too. So I'm incredibly sad about Cam Chancellor, and I hope that, above anything else, he just returns to health for himself and for his life after football. Yeah. And you just hope for the best for Cam.
Well, and it's just, again, highlights just how brutal the sport is. It was such a weird, fluky injury, and similar to Cliff Averill's, and we also got news on Cliff yesterday, but that can end a career as, you know, even if it doesn't end up in the Hall of Fame, as illustrious as Cam's, is really unfortunate and sad.
Yeah, and that, for that reason, I hope he gets into the Hall of Fame. I know I've advocated for it. I know that people in Canton are listening to me, so hopefully it reaches further and gets into all the football fans' minds. But Cliff Averill...
I don't want to rehash this, Grant, but as good as Cam Chancellor...
I'm in a bad place right now. I need a pick-me-up, so the thought of him reaching that point would make me very happy for Cam and very happy as a Seahawks fan. But we did receive some clarity on Cliff Averill's injury. Spike, what did we hear yesterday?
That he's going in for surgery for, I believe, a spinal disc fusion, something along those lines. It sounds pretty severe, and it sounds like it is pretty severe. Pete Carroll said that some guys come back from this injury, some guys don't. And that's sort of where we are with Cliff. It seems less likely that his career is over than Cam's. And look, we're just speculating on Cam officially. He has not officially retired or anything along those lines. But but with Cliff, you've got him out for the year and basically a coin flip to be able to play again on the other side of this injury, and it's up to him. And there's another guy who, incredible on and off the field, massive impactful plays, brought the city the first championship of my lifetime, only the second professional championship in the city's history at the time. Go Sounders. Go get that fourth one next weekend, boys. Yeah, I'll just say that, again, like, it's nice to have a little clarity around Cliff, and it's interesting that he's going for surgery when Cam isn't, which lets you know that they had different injuries, and I think we knew that because Cliff had continued discomfort, and Cam, it's just about safety going forward, and also it makes it sound a little more likely that Cliff is going to try to come back. The team's done a pretty good job compensating for him, although I will say the pressure rate's down, which is, like, not the most important thing when it comes to someone having neck surgery.
Right.
But Cliff has been missed and on the field, and it's at least been good that he's been continuing to make an impact off the field, and hopefully will continue to for the rest of his life. Someone asked Pete the question, like, do you think these guys are maybe not coming back because they've already gotten their second and third contracts? And Pete was like, I don't want to talk about this, man.
Right. It's not the place. I mean,
there's no way Pete Carroll's going to answer that question. Come on, man.
Right. That deserves a come on, man.
Come on, man.
As far as other news goes, a new Detroit Lion, Dwight Freeney, was speaking about his release by the Seahawks, and he said that the team wanted to bring him back, but they needed depth at linebacker, which is funny because Bobby Wagner didn't practice all of last week. Michael Wilhoit didn't practice, I think, Wednesday and Thursday, you were saying.
Yeah.
And so the team, you know, as good of a game as they both had, like, it's kind of crazy that they didn't practice the whole week, and Bobby Wagner being hurt is not a good thing. I wouldn't say that I'd suggest playing him when he's hurt, although he looked great on Sunday. I hope that it's a really minor thing. He should practice this week. And as far as Michael Wilhoit goes, I think
it was a Michael Wilhoit revenge game.
Yeah, Michael Wilhoit revenge game happened, and we didn't really see anything out of the norm from him. He played well, and Bobby Wagner played all world, and we'll get into our ode to Cam Chancellor right after this. We're back, and before we get into the Cam Chancellor stuff, the Seahawks and Jaguars game was actually moved up to a 1 p.m. Pacific time start, which is great news for the Seahawks because traditionally they haven't been great on 10 a.m. starts, especially flying cross-country. Spike, this is great news, isn't it?
Yeah, this is, I think, the first season, maybe ever, that the Seahawks don't have a single 10 a.m. start on their schedule, which is wild. A lot in the past, it's been going to St. Louis has always been a 10 a.m. start, pretty much, but obviously we don't go to St. Louis anymore. And inevitably there was one or two others, it felt like, and those were always brutal. Those always involved slow starts. And this team's been starting slow enough without starting at 10 a.m. in Jacksonville. So I think it's great news. I think that matchup still poses a lot of problems to this team, and I think that's going to be, in many ways, a crucial game for this team. If you look forward at the schedule, five games left. There is this Eagles game coming up on Sunday, which is very scary. And then there's two winnable but very difficult games at home against the Rams and at Jacksonville. And then two winnable, slightly less difficult games against Dallas and Arizona. And making this Jacksonville game even a little bit more winnable, given some of those horrifying matchups with our offense against their defense, and frankly, vice versa. That game could well end up 6-3. I think any edge we can get is great, and I think we're going to maybe need that game, either if we beat the Eagles and the Rams to grab the division, or if we don't win both those games, just to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be an important game going forward, and it's a game where I think it's going to be tough to throw the ball, and it's going to be tough to run the ball, because as good as the Seahawks have been in run defense over the past 5 weeks or so, the team right behind them in 1 and 2 are the Seahawks and Jaguars in the past 5 weeks in run defense. Yeah. So it's going to be tough sledding in every department. I mean, the Seahawks offensive line has improved, and they've been, I think, a top 10 unit in Dwayne Brown's time in Seattle, but that Jacksonville pass rush has been just insane. And
the Kevin Pelton just posted the stats on 10 a.m. starts. So thank you to Kevin Pelton for this. But the Seahawks had averaged 3.6 10 a.m. starts per season in the Russell Wilson era, and went 9-9 in those games, as opposed to 13-8 in their other road games. So it made a difference. It wasn't a crazy difference. Although, again, a lot of those nine games were against St. Louis I feel like we beat the Jets and the Giants, like garbage Jets teams. Like that doesn't even.
Anyways, 10 a.m. starts usually bad. Not as bad as I originally thought. I mean, 500. I mean, given how good the Seahawks team, I guess it's like when you look at it, a little bad. But at the same time, it's like, you know, a lot of teams would be lucky to go 500. So
can I go on a rant about our schedule a little bit?
All right. I'm going to let you cook. Go for it.
All right. So there's a few things going on when you look at the Seahawks schedule right now. The first is that we have one of the easiest strengths of schedule to this point in the season. And I think that's really misleading. When we played Houston, they had Deshaun Watson. When we played Green Bay, they had Aaron Rodgers. And when we played Tennessee, we were playing a pre-injury Marcus Mariota. If you take those three guys and extrapolate the sort of teams we played in those games across the schedule, those teams win another 6-7 games. And all of a sudden, you add 6 or 7 wins to our opponent's strength of schedule, and we're no longer 31st in the league. We're something like 20th in the league, which is to say we've played a pretty average schedule thus far. That said, we've beaten nobody. I mean, we beat the Rams on the road, but we were pretty badly outplayed in that game. We beat Houston, and yeah, they had Deshaun Watson, but also they're kind of trash. They didn't have J.J. Watt or Whitney Mercilus on defense. And so when you look at what we've done, we've beaten Indianapolis, we've beaten Arizona, we've beaten San Francisco twice, and we've beaten the Giants. And so I just want to say, like, we have no idea what this Seahawks team is. Like, we've beaten nobody. We've played really good teams tight. Our strength of schedule looks way worse than it is, but we still don't have a single realistically good win over a good team this year. Like, what is our team, Grant? Like, what is happening? Who is this team? And I guess we're going to find out in the next 3 weeks as we go to Jacksonville. We play the Rams at home. And obviously this Sunday we have a marquee matchup in primetime against the Eagles. But I'm like, what are we? What are we? What is this? What is happening? Grant, who are the Seahawks?
Well, I don't know. I think maybe we look a lot better –
Yeah.
And I hate to put this on one player, and he doesn't deserve all the blame, but it partially falls in the leg of Blair Walsh, and given the outcome of the Washington game, and it partially falls on a lot of people in the Atlanta game, because, you know, despite how bad they played, they were in position to win that game, and they could have made plays to win the game.
I'll say this, man, though, like, the Washington game, leg of Blair Walsh, fine, but also Blair Walsh, you know, effectively got the game-winning kicks against San Francisco when we played them, like, earlier in the year when we won 12-9. Same, you know, like, I don't think you can necessarily play that sort of game out.
I don't know, but
football's
cruel enough. It's cruel enough to place it on one player, and it oftentimes, as crappy as it is, falls on the kicker because it's such a high leverage position and high leverage points in the game.
I don't think that that's indicative of what this team is, and I also don't think if we had beaten Washington it would change my understanding of this team. And also against Atlanta, they were 99.8% to win that game, and then we came back and had a chance to tie it. Like, we weren't in a, like, I feel like there's this thing of like, oh man, if Blair Walsh had made those kicks, we'd be 9-2. It's like, well, he almost made a kick to put us in overtime, but it was from 52 yards in Seattle, and we knew he was good from – we knew we needed one more yard, and in fact, we did. So it's like, I don't know. I think that they're – and also our team has changed so much this year. We haven't had a year where either we've had this amount of injuries on defense or this amount of improvement from our offensive line as the year has gone on. And so, like, I don't know what this team is. Like, I guess I'm just saying this because, like, we're going to go into a game on Sunday against a totally complete Philadelphia team. And I honestly, I'm like, we could beat the hell out of them or we could not hang. We could get embarrassed. And either of those, I'm like, yeah, I guess that's possible. Like, yeah, like Carson Wentz could throw three picks right to Earl Thomas. Like, that's totally in play. Also, we could fail to move the ball against them at all and they beat us like 27-10. Like, that's in play. I have no idea what this team is, Grant. I just got to say it. Like, and I don't think that there's anything simple to like, oh, if it's just Blair Walsh, if it's just Pete Carroll, if it's just Tom Cable, if it's just, you know, like, it's all of it. It's a whole
melange. It's a mixture of things. And partially what this team is a team that's been not ruined by injuries, but definitely affected by it. And as good of a job as John Schneider has done over the course of the season filling in for them, you know, they're still limited by that. And yeah. And when it comes down to these close games, a lot of players are going to be put under a microscope. But it's a combination of things, and not one person deserves the blame. I think we've said that before on the show after the Atlanta game, that not one person deserves the entire blame for something. But it's a combination of things. It's a combination of what happens over the course of games that really, really leave the Seahawks, you know, in question. Because, like, there's games where they're close, but they can't, you know, find the magic of past years to get over the hump and win these games. And yeah. I think, you know, if you look at the schedule, it's misleading because, yeah, Green Bay is not the same team without Aaron Rodgers. And Houston's definitely not the same without Deshaun Watson. And I just think, and they were in position, they made those games close, and they won the Houston game, and we forgot to mention that DeMarco Murray was fully healthy in Tennessee, and it was in a weird stretch where they were giving up big runs, but yeah. at the same time, we're going to see what the Seahawks team is against the Eagles team, because they have to play to their best. There's no coming out slow, getting the slow start. There's no hanging around and trying to play catch up with this Eagles team, because we've seen them boat race teams and they'll dance on your they'll dance against your team.
Yeah.
Like literally and figuratively. So yep. it's gonna be not almost gut check time for the Seahawks, because it's a very important part of the season. They're not in the playoffs right now, and a loss would further put them back, and at that point, it's falling out of their own hands to control their own destiny. So I think it goes without saying, but this is the biggest game of the season coming up. And we'll finish this conversation right after this. All right, we are back. And we were supposed to get to the Cam Chancellor stuff, but we got a little sidetracked there, but for good reason, because, you know, this Seahawks team is confusing sometimes, and we just need to air our frustrations and talk about it. But Cam Chancellor, world-class guy, on and off the football field. And Spike, I have a ton of favorite Cam Chancellor plays. Some are more obvious than the other, but I think first we have to talk about the completely legal hit against Vernon Davis. That is probably the most, one of the most iconic plays in the Seahawks history, I feel.
Yeah, I agree. I watched that hit on a plane. I was on JetBlue flying across the country, and that hit happened, and I went, oh!
And Vernon Davis flew right past you.
In the air, man. It was wild.
I don't ever think I've seen such impact on a football field, and like we were saying earlier, it was completely clean. Like, Cam Chancellor, like, transformed into, like, the most feared safety in all of football and did it in clean ways. And for him to be flagged on that, I'm still mad about that. And it's a disservice from Cam Chancellor, because that play didn't end up being what it should have been, an incomplete pass, but then it moved the ball for the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, well, also we won that game pretty
handily. That game. I think that was a pretty important game to win, too.
It was a really important game to win. It was a really important game to win back when playing the 49ers meant a lot more than it means now. For me, I'll say that similar hits against the 49ers in that NFC Championship game were what really stick out to me. He also had a huge interception in that game.
Right.
On Colin Kaepernick that should have sealed the game. We ended up having to lose our minds in fear and anxiety anyway later, but he made some huge, huge plays in that one. And again, in the Super Bowl, arguably he should have been the MVP of that game. In many ways, he was the MVP of that game, even if Malcolm Smith had some more gaudy plays. Sort of statistical results. Yeah.
I think, yeah, that first off for that Super Bowl, that hit against Demaryius Thomas, I don't think that I've screamed louder besides the Vernon Davis hit, besides that hit. And, you know, he had that interception that was Peyton Manning floated that ball, but, you know, he was there, he caught the ball, and he made about 9 tackles, I think. And he had a very similar stat line to Malcolm Smith, but Smith did have that touchdown. I think that Cam, his impact was, you know, it was clear from the moment they snapped the ball in that Super Bowl, and the intimidation factor, the Legion of Boom at their peak, that's what separated them from the Broncos a lot, because to have such a historic offense go against a historic defense was a matchup that you would love to see in every Super Bowl, but you don't. But for that kind of matchup to be, you know, right there in front of your face, and to see the Seahawks dominate in a fashion that they did was so boring for, you know, a lot of football fans. But for us, you know, it was pure nirvana. I mean, you see this team, as hard as they work, as great as they play all season, to just have that one final game to just, I don't, like, celebrate and, like, just totally flex their muscles.
As we saw the next year, you usually don't get the opportunity to have sort of a victory lap at the end of a great season. Usually great seasons end in a defeat. And even if they end in a win, it is rare that you get something like Super Bowl 48 where it's utterly uncontested by the other team, and you sort of just get a ball out. And Cam really balled out in that game. He balled out that whole season and the following season. Those were his two, I think, strongest years on the team.
And I think one other personal favorite of mine was when they were playing Arizona in Arizona, and Cam lined up in the box, and he blew up Eric Winston and made a tackle on a Andre Ellington that was in the air. He pulled him out of the air and tackled him. It was just, you saw, like, Cam Chancellor was not to F with. Like, he's a bad man. And he blew up an offensive lineman and then proceeded to make a tackle. Like, that's, he's just, insane. Like, there's not enough words.
Yeah, that's what you expect someone like Sheldon Richardson to do. You don't expect someone like who's plays safety to do something like that. But Cam Chancellor was not your average safety.
He was not. It's sad. This is not the fashion that I want to do this rundown on favorite Cam Chancellor plays, but, you know, we can't do anything but celebrate Cam Chancellor's time at the Seahawks and hope that he's healthy. Spike, do you have any other plays that come to mind when you think of Cam Chancellor?
I mean, it's just that sense of, like, when you watch a football game and a running back is running into the open field and you're like, uh-oh, there's... You know, there's 9 yards. When it's one of those mid-distance runs, and then all of a sudden they are just stopped cold in their tracks after 3 or 4, that's what I think of when I think of Cam Chancellor. I think of him crashing down into the box or crashing down just outside the tackles and just smashing a running back, and all of a sudden their momentum stops going altogether, and they don't fall forward. They don't get those extra yards. And over the course of a game, over the course of a season, over the course of Cam's career, those yards added up to wins. Like, those yards meant fewer first downs, which meant fewer points, which meant more Seahawks wins. And you can count those sort of stats, but it's tough to put the way that he gets tackles on the stat sheet, because as many tackles as Bradley McDougal got on Sunday, and as good as McDougal's look in relief of Chancellor, he doesn't get the same sort of tackles. He doesn't have that same sort of impact. He's never going to have Cam Chancellor's leverage. And, it could be decades before we have a strong safety who hits like that again. I mean, before Cam, you have to go back to Kenny Easley, and that's, you know, decades earlier. Cam is a once-in-a-generation style player. I mean, we see it right now in Atlanta with Keanu Neal, that there might be someone to take that mantle of hard-hitting athletic safety. But again, you know, that's coming in like 6 years later. Like, Cam Chancellors don't come around every day.
No, it's... I'm not going to say he's a one-of-a-kind player, but the style that he played, he's definitely the torch carrier for it, and he kind of started that whole thing. Like, he evolved with the league, and he did his part in changing it and having these safeties play up and be as aggressive as they are. And so we've seen Cam Chancellor kind of usher in this new kind of play style. And his impact, you know, is going to last a lot longer than his tenure with the Seahawks.
Yeah. Yeah, and Pete was talking about how he is on the sidelines right now helping coach up the secondary. And it's interesting seeing him and Sherman already morph into that off-the-field role, and I wonder how closely they're both going to hew to football. They're both really interesting guys. They both have the capacity to make larger impacts in the community, and I wonder if they end up coaching, if they end up announcing, what sort of connection of the game they maintain, and how closely that aligns with the Seahawks. Obviously, they're both Seahawks legends. They will be welcome to raise the flag or whatever they want to do. You know, for the rest of their lives, drinks are on them in Seattle, obviously, but I wonder if either or both of them end up working under Pete Carroll or one of their former coordinators somewhere else. Like, will Cam go and work for Dan Quinn? Like, that's not crazy to think about. Right. And it would actually be kind of cool if he ends up being Keanu Neal's coach or something along those lines. I wonder if that's where he go. Again, he hasn't retired yet, so, you know, right, we're having a eulogy, but it's fine. I think that's good. I think it's good to remember the good moments, because it's easy for players as they get injured to immediately move on to the on-the-field stuff or just to forget about how big an impact they had on a team. And it's worth saying that there's no minimizing what Cam did for this organization.
Right, because oftentimes a lot of players, when they have such a big injury, they don't come back the same. So, you know, the player that you see after the injury is often not the player that you see before. And so we need to dwell on these moments sometimes to, you know, kind of just remember and don't forget the just big impact and the kind of player and the big plays that they made. And I know it goes without saying, but these two are going to definitely be in the Ring of Honor for the Seahawks, and they're going to be honored as legends, and that's what they should be. Like you said, like, they'll never have to pay for a drink in Seattle again. And I think that is really near the end of our show today.
Yeah. Well, the only thing we got left to talk about is the fact that Michael Bennett is on the TBS show Drop the Mic tonight, rap battle or insult battling Vanessa Hudgens.
All right. So here's the thing that I'm thinking of. Like, how do you insult Michael Bennett? Because, like, he's a great guy.
Yeah. Well, racists on Twitter do it all the time. So
how do you logically insult Michael Bennett?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think I know someone who works on the show, so I don't want to go off on it too hard. But like, these guys are just reading insults off of cue cards that were written for them. Like this is beneath my, like, as cool as it is that Michael Bennett is out there doing his thing, to me, this is a little beneath Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett, if you're putting him on a game show, I want to see him on Jeopardy. I want to see him on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I want to see him on The Weakest Link.
Like what was
greed? He needs to be making $1 million, man.
Like, what are these writers going to be like? Oh yeah, Mike, you jump off sides a lot. What's up with that? Or like,
well, to be fair, if Vanessa Hudgens specifically calls Michael Bennett out for jumping off sides a lot, would be dope. I'd be into that.
Like, big ups to Vanessa Hudgens if that happens. I don't think it will. Like, yo, you do great work in the community. Like, there's nothing there's nothing for her to say, really, about Michael Bennett.
What's the thing for anyone? Like,
what's up about your pads being so small, Mike? What's up with that?
To those of you out there working on lip sync or rap battle shows, maybe don't. Maybe just don't. Maybe don't do these things. Maybe don't live. Maybe, I don't know, man. Carpool Karaoke, like, get out of here. I hate these shows.
There's so many shows. Like, even that would be more entertaining to see Michael Bennett on, because, like, I don't want to hear him talk about, like, an insult, like, for Vanessa Hudgens. Like, I would love to see him, like, sing some ballads with whoever's in the car with him. But,
man, Michael Bennett in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Let him act, man.
They're not utilizing Michael Bennett to his full talents.
And we see Marshawn Lynch doing better things. We see him going out with Bear Grylls. We see him doing this weird Facebook show that's, like, weird and kind of funny. Like, Marshawn Lynch is living the life. Michael Bennett deserves to live a life closer to Marshawn Lynch's than whatever the hell this is.
I think they're trying to make him live, like, Russell Wilson's kind of life. Russell Wilson would be way better suited for a show like that. And then Michael Bennett deserves a show kind of like Marshawn's, or he deserves to go to Scotland and hang out with people and talk about Skittles.
Yeah, I'd watch Michael Bennett do that, I guess. I don't know. Man, all right, let's get out. I'm heated. I got to get out of here, man.
All right. So for Locked On Seahawks and a pissed off Spike Friedman, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off, also reminding you to leave a thing on iTunes and play draft.com. Live your best life by supporting our stuff. And also, I gotta go, man. This is too much.